Ranking the automakers by their R&D spending, Mark Royce makes nice with Tesla and how Audi is revolutionizing the way that cars get repaired.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Hyundai. See what makes Elantra so nice. Check out its style, interior space, fuel economy, and popular features now.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 254 for August 22nd, The Art of Audi. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Gary V, how you be?
I'm doing good, John. How about you?
I'm doing terrifically.
We haven't seen each other since Traverse City.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
It's first show in months with no bandage on the nose.
Oh, my gosh. So oh, you're healing.
Still recommending that sunscreen, everyone, so you don't have to have the bandage on the nose like I did.
We should let everybody know we're being joined by Mike Strong, freelance automotive journalist. Mike, great having you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And, of course, one of the reasons why we've got you here is you're up to speed on this thing, this art robot that Audi's using.
Yeah, it's, you know, I can't wait to hear more about it. It's, you know, it seems to be a really compelling technology. I think they're sort of putting themselves on the forefront of customer service with this thing. So I can't wait to see how it works in person.
Well, cool. And then we should also let everybody know who else from Audi is joining us today, starting with Jamie Dennis, the Director of Product Quality and Technical Service for Audi of America. Jamie, great having you here.
I'm glad to be here, John. Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to get more into why you're here, but we've got some other introductions to do. Brian Stockton is also with us here in the studio. He's the General Manager for Technical Support of Audi of America. And then not in the studio with us here, and you're going to see him in a minute anyway, or certainly hear him, Kevin Guerin is the manager of technical assistance for Audi of America, too, and he's part of this demonstration that we're going to be going through. So now let's come full circle and come back to Jamie and say, what is this thing? What is this thing called art that you've brought to the studio today?
Yeah, art. It's Audi Robotic Telepresence is its name. And essentially, I suppose what it's all about is telepresence.
And what's that, telepresence?
Telepresence is actually virtually being there. I mean, a little bit of background about what we do to support the Audi brand in the US. My team and our role is all about technical support. And we have about four different teams at different levels that support dealers. We have dealer-facing team. And in the dealer-facing team, they're all about when a dealer has an issue, a technician has an issue, he'll call into our technical helpline, and we do our best to try and support them. On occasions, we have to dispatch what we call our level two support, which is our technical field managers, to go out there and work with the dealer to diagnose a car and support their dealer.
So they physically drive to the dealership or fly to some other city and then drive to
the
dealership?
That's it. So you could be two hours away, or you could be 2 days away from supporting a dealer. So one of our challenges is how do we continue to improve the customer experience by delivering compelling technical support? So we came up with the challenge internally of how can we get there quicker? How can we, with the brand growing, how can we support our dealers quicker? And that's where art comes along.
So now, I know I've totally misconstrued what art is in other things I've been talking about, but I've sort of described it as an iPad on a Segway. That's not exactly it. Describe a little bit more of what it is.
Yeah. It is very different than an iPad, back to the telepresence side of it. It has a lot more functions than an iPad does. I mean, typically we looked at iPads and we looked at phones, phone video cameras and so forth to support the dealers. But art was very much different. You're virtually being able to control the operation of this machine through our Auburn Hills operation. And that's the sort of thing you couldn't do through an iPad.
So I think it'd be worth pointing out that this isn't being developed because there's any problem with Audi quality. It's getting better. It's not getting not better. And this is just supplemental to make it even better for the person who buys an Audi. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's really like, you know, we sat down and we looked at how can we improve the customer experience. And, you know, problems do happen with vehicles, and our job is to try and get out there and support the dealer as quick as possible. And this technology allows us within literally minutes to hours, we can be there, engage with a dealer to try and support them, to diagnose hand in hand, stand there and support them.
Jamie, it sounds to me like Audi is really keying in on customer satisfaction, that this is something that it's really attacking. Is that right? Is that the reasoning behind doing this?
Yeah, John, it's a big initiative for us. I think probably late or mid last year, you had Jerry Ward, who is the director of our customer experience team. And we talk about KB, Kuddenbegeisterung.
Wait. Say that again?
KB, Kuddenbegeisterung.
That's so, a German word.
As an Aussie saying a German word. So, but, yeah, it's all about, if you translate that, it's customer experience. So how can we create Audi fans is what we translate that to our dealers for. And we play a pretty important part of that as technical service. You know, at the end of the day, if we can't support the dealers for diagnosing cars quick and efficiently, without them coming back and repeat repairs, then that is, you know, can be a bad experience for the customer.
So the customer comes in with the vehicle and you want to get it turned around as quickly as possible and done correctly.
That's it. That's our goal. And we know that if we can create that experience, you know, that certainly helps with the overall brand experience.
And I got to believe Audi believes this is something that would distinguish it from other luxury car makers.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I say, for us, it's all about timeliness and accuracy. That's what we challenge ourselves with trying to come up with. And we believe this model art that you'll get to see certainly helps us in that area.
And presumably, the complexity of automobiles is making it more difficult to diagnose some problems due to the various electronic systems, to say nothing of the classical mechanical systems that are in a vehicle. Is this something that is being addressed by this new technology that you guys are developing?
And that's right. I mean, we talked about product quality for the brands continuing to get it better and better. That also creates some challenges because there's less opportunities to understand the technology in the vehicle, because if things go wrong, you learn about it, you learn how to fix it. So when you've got less problems, the challenge is when you do have a problem, all right, I need to try and understand how that system operates. What do I need to do to diagnose it? And that's where our technical helpline comes into play. Mm-hmm. And we have a great model. I mean, our model is all about offering support through phone support for our dealers. And then if it's escalated, and we probably get about 6% of our calls, and we probably take about 8,000 calls a month, that through our technical helpline, 6% get escalated to our TFM. So that's...
Wait. Go through those numbers again. You get 8,000 phone calls a month.
A month.
At your technical center in Auburn Hills from Audi dealers throughout
the U.S.
We
have around 280 dealers out in the U.S.
And then how many need a technical field expert to
get? Yeah, it can be anywhere around 6%, where it's, we work with a dealer to solve the problem. If we need to be on site, and that's typically what the next escalation is, we send and dispatch our TFMs. And, you know, that can take 2 hours or 2 days before we can get out there to support that dealer and that customer.
So that's about 3,000 calls that need to be physically made.
Yeah.
And you have 20 people.
Yeah, interesting. We were talking about this earlier. We have 20 technical field managers out there. So they do a fantastic job in supporting our dealers. And, you know, it's all about coach and counsel when they're out there as well, so we can hopefully try and reduce these call-outs. And that's where we really see the benefit of this robotic technology.
So what you're hoping is Art will save these 20 technical field managers all kinds of driving and travel time. They'll just show up. We got to get to it. Enough talking about it.
Yeah, you need to see it.
Let's bring Art out. Let's show the audience what we're talking about here. Okay, now we see Art moving in. How's he doing this? How's Art showing up here?
Okay, well, a couple things. Let me give you
a little bit of a rundown. So let everybody know, this is Brian Stockton talking now. Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, so let me give you a little rundown on some of the base equipment. So we want to show you how it works. But this technology is really geared for the automotive, so we've added a few things to it. It's got a borescope attached to it, which we're going to show you.
A what?
A borescope.
I've never heard that term. What?
A borescope.
B-O-R-E?
Exactly
scope?
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, quite often you're trying to look into a cylinder or you look inside of a transmission before you disassemble it, right? So we want to save the technicians time. We don't want them pulling things apart, wasting time taking it apart. If we can look in and see where the damage is at, we might put a full assembly in it. Or we might look in and find out there's nothing wrong with that component. Let's move on with the rest of the diagnosis.
So for those who are listening on the podcast, this is like a long wire with a camera, and a miniature camera, and a light at the end of it.
Yeah, I think he might be able to show it here.
It's like an industrial endoscope.
Okay, so we added the borescope. And, of course, we changed some technology. We put some USBs down here. We also added what would be kind of a wide-angle camera as well. And what's nice about this camera, again, wide-angle, it's got two microphones on each side of it. So we're looking at brake noise. We're looking at squeaks inside the car, things that are difficult to diagnose that you kind of have to be there. And we can pick up all those inputs through this camera and these microphones. So, again, a couple customized things that we've done with this unit for the automotive side. On top of that, we spent a long time just working on the resolution on the screen so we can see what's going on. So you can see Kevin's face in the background. He represents what we would have for our technical assistance team back in Auburn Hills. So if I'm the technician, I can see what's going on. I can see him. If he wants to show me something, he can explain it to me. If he's got parts at his desk, all those things can happen quite naturally, just like me and you were talking. So that's kind of the overall things that we've added to this unit. While we've got Kevin there, Kevin, why don't you go ahead and take a moment and take the team through what you're seeing and how you control it.
Sure, Brian, thanks. So you can see on my screen, we have this arc. The farther you move this cursor out to the arc, the faster the unit goes. We can turn right or left. We can go in reverse. So for example, I will come towards the camera here. And I can turn towards the panel. And hello, everybody.
Hello, Art.
I can also take snapshots. So I can take your picture right now and download that to my laptop. I can take sound recordings, the video recordings. And like Brian said, I can also switch between cameras. So I can switch between our borescope, our handheld camera, or the camera that's located on the unit. So overall, it's fairly easy to maneuver and around vehicles. As you see, I can drive this thing anywhere. I have a wireless connection.
Right. Can you guys run us through like a demonstration?
Yeah, we're going to take you through a couple examples. Again, but kind of the mental image from our mind is, you know, with the technical field managers across the country, the idea is we want to be shoulder to shoulder with our techs. And that's really the value with that TFM. They do great things when they're working with the techs side by side. We've had these things out for a few months since June doing some pilot work. And this is where we're seeing this big input, this improvement in that quality of communication and getting to the right diagnosis quickly, which is our initiative. So with that being said, we've got a vehicle we brought. And we want to take you through kind of an example of how we would use it with our technicians. So I've brought my technician shirt, so I'm going to be the technician today. And Kevin's going to work with me as if we had a misfire condition with this car. And so let's go ahead and just get started. So, Kevin, go ahead and give me some instruction on what I should do next for this vehicle.
All right, perfect, Brian. So I noticed that you have the spark plug out of cylinder number 2. So we're going to go ahead and use the borescope and try to take a look in that cylinder and see what's going on with the cylinder walls.
Okay. So I'm going to grab the borescope. We've already unhooked it off the hanger. On the borescope, we've got a mirror assembly on the outer edge, so it's a 90 degree in this case. But he may tell us to use different ones, depending on what you're trying to look at, right? If you're trying to go totally back 180 degrees or not. When we have the borescope running, I can see as a user, as a technician, what Kevin is seeing or what our tech team is seeing and what you're also seeing up on the other screen. So, Kevin, go ahead and give me a little coaching on this, all right?
All right, Brian, let's go ahead and slide that into the cylinder. And I want you to come just above the piston. And let's take a look and see if we can see that cylinder wall. Then we're going to go around slowly so we can see the whole cylinder. And we will look for any damage. Once you get in there, you can also adjust the light on the borescope with the dial that's on the handle. And you can see the mirror that you can see on your screen there. And you can kind of get the best picture of the cylinder wall. So once you come back towards the top of the cylinder a little bit and turn up that brightness, oh, too far, down a little bit. All right, there we go. So now we're seeing some of the cylinder wall. Let's go ahead and turn it slightly. And normally if you would have damage, you would see the vertical scratches that would cause issues. But here we're seeing that everything looks good.
So during a procedure, is the technician actually hearing him? I mean, not necessarily him, but whoever it is.
The TFM.
Yeah, through art. So, yeah, you would hear exactly this. And this is where this whole presencing's work. Okay. It's like having a TFM standing next to you.
Because it's real time. Yeah. It's pretty good resolution, pretty good audio. It's like just having a conversation with somebody, but through a camera.
Yeah, just for a minute, imagine us going through that process without a diagnostic tool like this. We would have to tell the technician over the phone, hey, we want you to go and take some photos. And there's borescopes out there and people can take photos. But that could be an hour or 2 hour process before we get it back at our call center to analyze it. And then we go, you know what? We didn't really get what we wanted out of that picture. Go and do it again. Here, actually, we're directing them through that process and say, you know what? That's a perfect spot. You know, just hold it there. We take a snap of it. It's uploaded straight away into our call center, and the guys can analyze it and go, right, well, here's the next process or the next step you need to take. Right, this is where the real beauty is.
So, I mean, just like Jamie said, Kevin, why don't you go ahead and grab a shot of that? Because actually when we take a photo, it's different than if you were to use Skype technology, right? Like your iPad.
Yeah.
When you're taking a photo here, it's like doing with a digital camera. We fully digitize it, and we send that data back. So you'll see here in a moment when Kevin opens it up on the screen, it's a very, very clear resolution. Where when you're using other technologies, it's a screen print. So it's more like a PDF copy.
Right.
So it's not quite as clear. If you're looking at gears or you're looking at terminals on connectors, these are important things to look at as far as discoloration, tension strength on them. All those things are a key factor for us.
How does it, you mentioned on the other tool that there are two microphones to allow you to do an auditory examination, if you will. How does it deal with the ambient noise that you always seem to hear in a service bay? You know, does that complicate things, or is
actually
it
not? We have 18 units that we've had piloting for quite some time, and I mean, unless you've got a guy right behind you running an impact, we've been able to get around it. Mm. Now, we have talked about in the future how can we make it even better, right? One of our objectives is make it better, make it more convenient. Mm-hmm. And for those technicians, we're looking at a Bluetooth headset, and if they need it, they can wear it. But it would be something they wouldn't use all the time. It really depends on what's going on behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this could be used to work on virtually any aspect of a car, right? The brakes, the exhaust, the engine, the interior, name it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of our challenges that I keep challenging this team is, well, how do you get it so it's in the passenger seat and you go for a test drive with that? That's the next generation. But most of our diagnostics evolve around the vehicle being stationary, starting to analyze things.
But the analysis of the problem is being performed by the human operator.
Yeah, it's always the human component that has that knowledge in Auburn Hills, so part of our technical assistance team. And what's great about it is that you could have a technical field manager. He's got a laptop. He's somewhere in the country looking at something else. That morning he says, I'm going to go look at this car with this technician that I know. He can do that. If he needs help, he can contact a colleague or an expert in Auburn Hills or one of our product support guys, and we could tag them into that screen. And fundamentally, I could have somebody from the factory in Germany or wherever that factory might be in Hungary and say, hey, take a look at this. We're trying to understand if this is normal. If it's not normal, what should we do next? So the aspect of getting the right people in on the discussion makes it very convenient.
So as one of our people viewing this right now, VRM, Chris points out, this is like medical diagnostics that's being done in certain cases where, you know, somebody's in Alaska or something, and
right,
and then they're communicating to a doctor who's in Los Angeles and calling in the experts to see what's
going on.
And
actually, it's a good point, to be quite frank. The basic technology, the basic bones of the unit, it generated or started from the medical industry. Mm. So we were looking around at how could we get the right result, similar to a TFM on site. And it's really the consulting piece, right? It's that face-to-face. And that's how we started using this. And then we said, well, we're a technical company. You know, we're car guys. So we need to have some other tools to make it more valuable. In fact, we're continuing that development right now. What else are we going to add to make it more valuable? And also to help those techs. Our techs have a big job, just like Jamie was talking about. Technology is moving fast. We have a lot of younger technicians that are out there. And you've got to be able to show them and do a little coaching counsel, give them those tidbits of information that they can use the next day to be effective and ultimately serve the customer.
Well, sure. You know, think about it. You know, Audi's got all kinds of scientists and engineers, PhDs, concocting up all kinds of new technology, new cars coming out all the time. This is brilliant to be able to bring super knowledge right to the tech's fingertips, literally, looking over his or her shoulder working on a car.
And if we just turn that around a bit, John, we talk about supporting our customers and our dealers, and that's our primary goal. That's our goal, is to really improve that customer satisfaction. But from an engineering standpoint, I mean, we're talking with our colleagues back in the factory about how they can use this type of technology. As Brian said, when we go through vehicle launches, we have a heavy concentration on product faults, because we know if we can get on top of issues in the very early stages of vehicles, when they're launched into a market, we can make sure that we get these solutions into the market as quick as possible so it doesn't affect other production vehicles. Mm-hmm. You know, and that process happens pretty rapidly. Imagine what we can do with this now. We can virtually be at a vehicle that has a problem and communicate directly with the factory through art. Mm-hmm. So they're actually, the engineers are seeing it. They're not asking questions and send us data and really let's look at it a bit more. And we're going to pilot that with the launch of some of our new vehicles coming up, is really be able to have these people engaged from the factory through art.
Look, I know we've got a lot more questions. We got to take a quick break right now, so nobody go anywhere, because we're going to be back in just a moment.
Introducing a car company that's never made a single car. Legendary durability. Impressive mileage. Firestone tires. So unstrap the saddle. These old stallions are ready to run. Again. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
We're here.
Okay, let's go back to this demonstration, because Brian was showing us the inside of a combustion chamber, but now you got a little bit more that you're able to show us on how you work together with the TFM, who's remote, but you're working it through art.
Okay. So, Kevin, back to you. So we looked at the cylinder, and you told me that you didn't see anything wrong. You snagged a photo of it. What's next?
Yeah, Brian, the cylinder looks great. So I do want to take a look at that spark plug before we go, so we can take a look and see if there's any issues. So I'm going to switch to the handheld camera.
Okay.
So let me take a look. So put that spark plug up right up in front of that camera, and let me take a look at it. So just back it away a little bit so you can see on your screen. All right, perfect. So what I'm looking here for, Brian, is a little discoloration in the electrode, and make sure we aren't burning any fuel that has dripped into the cylinder or any extra fuel. We're making sure there isn't any carbon deposits. But again, this looks good as well. Good clean burn on that plug.
That's pretty good resolution. I had no idea that it was, I mean, it is almost as if you're physically examining that spark plug right in your own hand.
Yeah, and this was a big challenge for us, John. I mean, in the inception of the machine, we spent a lot of time working with the developers on resolution. You know, we wanted to be able to have a part that we could really take a good look at, and the guys remotely could do some thorough diagnosis. So that was a big part of it.
So you're doing this all via Wi-Fi? So
Yeah, through hotspot, through Wi-Fi is basically mm-hmm. how the technology works.
And we've tagged it into the dealer's network with our current systems. So we already have a system that they use to communicate with us as far as sharing files for technical assistance. We keep track of all the cars. We've tagged into that same network, so we know it's a secure network, that it's robust, and that we can actually use it. It's the same network they use for their scan tools in the mm-hmm. dealer.
How long have you been using this? How many do you have in the field? What can you tell us about the results
I can take those if you'd like, Jamie. So we've got about 68 right now that are out there.
And they've been out how long?
Those are pretty recent, in the last month and a half.
Uh-huh.
We started a pilot just before June. We went on sale, so maybe about the last 3.5-4 months, we've really been trying them out.
So this is brand new.
Pretty hot and heavy.
Brand new.
Now, we've worked on it for a long time, so we should go back. We started on this, 2011?
Yeah.
And in 2012, we picked up some pretty good steam. We started working on the resolution. We put a couple units to test. So we've had them all over the country, trying them out in dealers for a few weeks here, trying this tool out, trying them in our own workshops. And so it's come a long way. We wanted to wait until we said it's a product that we know we can use before we put it in any dealership. So we knew what we had kind of to get started. And so 68 so far. And then if we include, the ones outside of the continental U.S., we have one in Germany right now. We have two that are on their way because those folks are going to be starting to use it as well. And then we have one that we've already sent to Singapore. So we've got colleagues in Singapore that also see the value in it. And we're all working collectively on how do we make this thing work for our brand and for our customers.
So do you see this as being beta tested, or is this pretty much fully baked and now you're just optimizing it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we spent, over 2 years trying to develop it. So it's out there. We've kept a reasonably small team that are working with it through the dealer network, and they're the dealers we're close with. And we'll continue to enhance it. We're already starting to talk about the next changes for ART. So we're looking at what we call pass-through technology, which is how do we integrate the real automotive diagnostic machine through ART.
So ART in the future will plug into the OBD2.
Virtually. Essentially.
We'll do it through a Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Right? So you'll plug a dongle in, which we kind of have that today on some of the laptops, which isn't unusual, if I could jump in.
Yeah.
But also allowing the user in the background. So Kevin's team, they can go in the background, pass through their tester software, and go help diagnose that vehicle. So if a dealer's having a tester issue, or they're having a software issue, or they don't have a tester available to them at that time, we can then still get that car fixed.
What kind of feedback do you get from the people using it in the dealerships? I'm certain they must play some sort of role in, telling you, I like this, I don't like that, you know.
Well, I want to refer back over to Kevin, because I see quite a few of them, and they're very excited. But, we talk about this quite often. So, Kevin, you want to jump in on the conversation briefly?
Oh, yes, the dealers are very excited to use it, and my guys use it every day at specific dealers. And we still have a group of technicians gathered around the unit to see how it works. They're very excited about it. And we've diagnosed some problems we would have normally had to send somebody on site, so it's definitely working to our advantage.
I'm intrigued that this is coming out of Audi of America and not coming out of Germany. How did this get going? Who did you work with to develop this?
Yeah, well, a little bit of history. It was, we talked about Kundbegeisterung, and for us it's all about customer delight, creating Audi fans. So we challenged ourselves in product quality and technical service, how can we better support our customers and our dealers? And that's how the conversation started. I imagine sitting in a room like the technicians, doctors are doing now, and fixing people through remote technology. How can we do that in automotive? And that's how it started. So Kevin went out and started to look at what was available, and that's where we got in contact with a company called Vigo Communications, and they specialize in
Vigo, the letter V, yeah, V-G-O, huh?
They're up in New Hampshire, and a small company, have robotic technicians and communication technicians, and we started to work with them.
What's it going to cost a dealer to put ART in their dealership?
Yeah, right now it's about $7,500, $7,600 for the unit that we have today. There's also a fee that goes into the network connectivity, which is more of an annual fee. It's a pretty small amount. But right now it's about $7,500. And we're looking at newer tools all the time. What else can we do to make it more valuable for them? So we've kind of kept it a little bit small right now because we will go back and we will make sure that all the previous units are updated and that they have the latest and greatest.
Okay, I'm an Audi dealer. $7,600 doesn't sound like too much money, but I'm not going to spend money unless I see a return on that investment. How do I justify that?
Yeah, I mean, A good question, because we get that from dealers a lot. I mean, you've only got to look at, if it takes us 2 days to get out to a dealer to support them, you know, and as a brand, we support our customers through loaner cars. So as an example, it could be a loaner car that's out for 2 days. It could be utilized by someone else. So that's a cost to the dealer. A work bay could be tied up for that time as well. So they may not be generating revenue through there. So there's these types of things.
So if I look at, this is going to free up work bays, this is going to cut down on the amount of loaner cars I got to have, that's how I'm going to see my ROI.
Yeah, and certainly from the fact that the company's philosophy is rallying around customer satisfaction and building that brand experience. And this is just one element that supports that.
You know, John mentioned that he was surprised that this is from Audi of America and not from Ingolstadt. So what was the reaction from your German colleagues that you guys came up with this idea?
Yeah, we took it over to them a few weeks ago and showed them. They've been sort of watching in the background how we've been developing this, and they're super excited to the point where they are looking at it in their German network. You know, they're obviously looking at it for potential other markets where there's, you know, some big distances. You take places like India, Brazil, places like that. So where you've got these great distances to support the dealers. So yeah, they're interested in it. They're obviously watching what we're doing with it because we're very deep into it. Mm-hmm. I certainly believe that this will start to cascade out to the rest of the world for Audi, so they're excited about it.
And who decided that it would look like that? For those of you who can't see it, it's like a tall, skinny R2-D2.
And let's add the other detail. It's got a little Audi grill with the four rings.
It's got the LED headlamps at the bottom as well.
Right. Well, I mean, I've got to give the company some credit because the basic structure is what you can buy. The look of it, the Audi look, was something internally we talked about. And, yeah, I mean, it's got the grill on it, the Audi grill, the RS grill. It's got performance wheels on it some great graphics, and that was something that we collectively just worked together on. So, we think it's very fitting for the brand.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is really cool. We're going to have to wrap it up here. But, Jamie, thanks so much for coming in. Brian, love having you here, and I guess I got to call out real loud to Kevin way out there inside of ART, but great having you all here. They're very interesting technology.
Let's have ART drive out.
And, okay, let's have ART drive out of the scene.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Real good. We'll go on a break right now and be back in just a minute.
Nice. Not nice.
The new Elantra from Hyundai. Nice.
Whether it's on television, online, or through social media, AutoLine knows how to effectively get your marketing message to the people you want to reach. Contact Stacy Eamon today.
So pretty interesting stuff, eh? What? I mean, I've never seen anything like that, not in a car dealership. I think this is pretty cool. And, you know, talking to them earlier, there's other applications that this could be used on the factory floor. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to go diagnose some problem with machinery or the like. I see all kinds of applications for things like this.
Right, but I think it was important to stress about this in terms of Audi that we see their sales increasing, especially in the United States, and being able to keep up with the demands in the dealerships by having technology like this is something that they're, you know, I think it's an absolute must.
Yeah.
Because if you're spending that kind of jack on a car, you know, you want your car back quickly and fixed right the first time. And,
yeah, it really seems more about efficiency, you know, and keeping up with that for sure.
You know, the $7,600, too, I don't think is going to scare any dealer away. I want to say Ford, for the new F-150, I think dealers have to buy $25,000 worth of tools to be able to work on the aluminum body. So
you
look at $25,000 for that, $7,600 for something like this, it's... like a big stretch.
Well, you amortize the cost of an hour at a dealership. I mean, you're paying for that pretty quickly. I think that would be cool stuff.
I got to believe other automakers have got to be looking at stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if Audi's part of the Volkswagen group, you got to believe that they're going to be the next ones in line for something like this. Or that's what I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's go into some of the other news that's been happening this week. And Gary, you liked some of the R&D rankings earlier this week.
Yeah, it was interesting that you guys broke it down and you were looking at
who's spending what in terms of
you know, I thought it was interesting the way you did it. You looked at the total dollars spent with Volkswagen spending $14.09 billion.
$5 billion more than Toyota, which is in second place.
You know, and it's sort of interesting that I went back and looked at Booz & Company does an annual ranking of top R&D spends, and so they have the numbers for 2013. The 2014 numbers aren't available yet. And interestingly enough, okay, so you looked at strictly car companies, and so VW first, then Toyota second, Renault, Nissan, Daimler, GM, Ford, Honda, BMW, Fiat Chrysler, and then PSA. In terms of the numbers that Booz & Company did, of all industries, the number one company, okay, and this includes Microsoft and Google and Apple and you name it, the number one company was Volkswagen in 2013 for spending.
Yow.
And
of any company in the world.
Any company in the world. And so this is 2013 number. You had 2014 numbers.
Ours are 2013. They came out of the 2013 annual report.
Well, so this basically has the R&D spend at $11.4 billion, which is a little bit less than what you had. But what I thought was interesting is the company that came in second place, okay, once again, all companies, is Samsung, okay? And realize Samsung's making phones, and they're making television sets, and they're making refrigerators, and they're making, you know, all kinds of things, right? They came in second. They were $1 billion below Volkswagen. $1 billion below. So, I mean, that's a pretty commanding lead. So, but what I thought was interesting is that another thing that you looked at was, you know, the percentage of revenue spent on R&D, and that BMW
is number one.
Came out number one in your rankings.
Because, big companies, small companies, how do you get a more apples-to-apples comparison? Well, what percent of all the money they bring in every year do they devote to R&D? And BMW devotes a greater percentage of all its money to R&D than any other automaker.
And then, but the interesting thing is that you have Toyota and PSA tied for last.
Yeah, right. Wow. Didn't that jump off the page?
Yeah, I mean, so I got to thinking about that. Okay, so you're making the point that PSA is probably going to spend less going forward. So let's just put them on the side. I mean, they got some other issues. But I was thinking, okay, if we look at the efficiency of Toyota, isn't it quite possible that their low spending just reflects the ability that they have to do things
more efficiently,
in a more of a Kaizen way.
I think you're right.
And so then going back to the Booz numbers, in 2012, Toyota was number one, okay? And in 2013, they dropped to sixth place, okay? But then I got to thinking about, okay, let's think about the technology. So, you know, we're going to have the FCV, the hydrogen vehicle that Toyota's going to be bringing out next year. Toyota's got 76% of the hybrid market in the United States. Isn't it possible that what you discovered was sort of the fact that they have been incrementally spending their money over a long period of time, and consequently they are able to build on what they have done in the past, and they don't need to spend quite as much in the present?
No, I would agree with that. I'd also point out that with what's Volkswagen up to now, 11 brands?
Yeah.
Toyota has essentially two. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some other things, right? But it's mainly Toyota and Lexus. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have multiple different brands to try and feed and take care of. The second thing is, I think this MQB platform strategy that Volkswagen has embarked on is outrageously expensive. Everything's got to be redesigned. Everything. Mm-hmm. All the engines, all the transmissions, you know. So not only is Volkswagen trying to feed so many brands, this MQB process or approach that it's taking is very expensive. Maybe as VW gets this all done, we'll see that spend go down or proportionately go down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a combination of the things that you just mentioned and this multiple brand and the MQB platform strategy.
You know, one thing that I think is a little disappointing is that in your analysis that of 10 companies and the General Motors, Ford, and brand formerly known as Chrysler are all in the lower rankings.
That's exactly right. And no, there's no matter what you look at, whether it's sales, whether it's revenue, whether it's operating or net profit, whether it's R&D spend, the Detroit Three are sliding down the list. They're still very big, very powerful corporations, but they're not the dominant ones that they once were. Mm-hmm. They're sliding down the list.
And not on your list, but this is a topic we should get to, that the booze people asked the R&D people from around the world the most innovative companies in the world in terms of their spend, okay? And so, no surprise, the most innovative companies in the world is Apple, according to them. But on the list is a company that I know you like a lot, Tesla, number nine.
Look, Tesla is an extraordinarily innovative company. And in fact, if you look at Elon Musk and what he's doing, he's got SpaceX is what I'm getting at. This guy knows how to pull together really good, technically competent people and get results out of them. So, yeah, look, I am still a skeptic about the whole EV thing because I see it mainly a market that's being promulgated by government regulation, not because consumers are banging down the door saying we want electric cars. But I grudgingly admit Tesla's done things very, very well.
So you heard Mark Royce say some nice things about it?
Yeah, you know.
What was that about?
Well, that was very interesting because a week ago, as part of the Dream Cruise, the radio station that I do reports on, WWJ, CBS Detroit, holds a breakfast every Dream Cruise week, and Mark Royce was the featured speaker there. And one of the people in the audience asked him, Mark, what do you think about Tesla? He could not say enough good things about Tesla. One point that he made that I found very interesting was that when Tesla got going, GM lost a number of its technical people to Tesla, quit GM and went to work there. He said a few of them have come back. If you remember, it was over a year ago, Dan Akerson, the chairman, said, we got to study these guys. We got to understand what makes them tick because they could be an existential threat to us. And Royce said that GM and Tesla actually have very good technical collaboration was not the word, but, you know, they've got good ties, the GM technical community into Tesla and vice versa. And I thought, how interesting, you know, here's Mark. And boy, there's nothing Mark would love to do better than kick another competitor in the teeth. You know, he's a very competitive guy. But yet here he's coming out saying the nicest things about Tesla. I thought that said volumes both about Mark Royce and about Tesla.
And he was impressed with their technology.
Very impressed. Very impressed.
Yeah. A rumor like about a year ago that somebody thought that GM would buy Tesla, and Mark saying nice things about that and maybe re-sparked that sort of thought in somebody's head. You know, we don't want to anger him. We might want him someday.
Yeah, it might be the other way around.
Well, I was going to say, but yeah.
They might be Tesla buying
exactly.
GM, though why they do that, I don't know. No, look, it's interesting. You know, it's usually on the design side of the community that there's this sort of fraternal, you know, brotherhood, not so much sisterhood. There's not a whole lot of sisters in there. But, you know, designers will talk about other products and compliment that. You don't see that in the management ranks. You don't see it in the manufacturing or the engineering ranks. But I found it very interesting that here's a top-level executive saying very nice things about this upstart company.
Yeah, and what did you make of Tesla announcing that they're warranting the drive unit for 8 years, which is the battery warranty, and infinite miles? I mean,
look,
that's better than what Hyundai has, right?
That's right. Look, and it was the 100,000 warranty, 100,000 mile warranty that put Hyundai on the map. I mean, what it did is it put them on the shopping list. Didn't put them on the map. They put themselves on the map. But the 100,000-mile warranty had people going, huh, well, if they're going to back it up, I'll check it out. And that's all it took.
Mm-hmm. Made people them serious.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So now they're infinite miles, and they're doing it retroactively. Okay, so this is if you have a Model S that you bought last year, it's covered. I mean, that is pretty astonishing.
It's pretty astonishing because up to now, everything that's come out of Tesla has been pretty much technically oriented or some sort of business disruptive thing, i.e., selling through its own stores and not going through the dealer franchise system. But here, boom, I mean, he's pulled a page right out of Hyundai's book and said, yeah, unlimited miles. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that's going to help them is people just do not put as many miles on their electric cars as they do on others. Tesla might be an exception.
Right.
Because if you get a 240-mile range car, presumably you are going to drive it as
much.
And
you got superchargers up and down California where all of these cars seem to be concentrated.
Mm-hmm. I saw one at the Dream Cruise.
Did you? Yeah.
I did. So it's not just there.
Someone near my house the other day out in Macomb Township.
There you go.
Well, Gary, what do you make of this? Some analyst came out and said, oh, this is going to bankrupt the company, you know, this unlimited
warranty. But when Musk made his statement, he said, to investors in Tesla, I must acknowledge that this will have a moderately negative effect on Tesla earnings in the short term, as our warranty reserves will necessarily have to increase above current levels. And blah, blah, blah. This is amplified by the fact we're doing so retroactively, not just for new customers. However, by doing the right thing for Tesla vehicle owners at this early stage of our company, I am confident it'll work out well in the long term. Okay. So we just saw Audi saying, hey, we've got to step it up in order to get customer satisfaction. We've got to get customer delight. We've got to get people supporting us. So here is this company, which, I mean, have you ever seen a Tesla ad? No.
No.
They don't do ads.
They don't need to.
Right. I mean, and so,
of course,
so
if
now
you're selling, you know, 20,000 vehicles a year, maybe you don't have to. I've never seen a Ferrari ad.
Good point. So. But no, but it's very interesting what he's doing. And so we'll see. I mean, is this going to transform the industry? Probably not, but it's going to have an effect.
Well, look, Elon knows the value of public relations. And so just when you think there's nothing else to say about Tesla, boom, they throw this mm-hmm. thing out there, and all of a sudden, you know, the blogosphere lights up, the mm-hmm. media is talking all about him. He knows how to keep the brand and himself relevant.
And he's doing all right, because earlier this week that some of the tech sites were reporting that SpaceX may have a valuation of nearly $10 billion. So that guy is a pretty crafty character.
That is, right? Yeah.
So you're mentioning Mark Royce. Okay, so this week he's quoted as saying, if we're a serious luxury car maker, it's really important to us, and he's talking about the codenamed LTS, the large rear drive vehicle. What do you think?
Well, look, they've been talking about this forever, you know, and maybe Mark is taking a page out of Elon's book and throwing something out there. But they've been talking about doing a full-size halo car, a flagship for the brand, for years. Now, you know, Mark Royce keeps reminding people, remember, we were in bankruptcy 5 years, so, you know, they've got to, you know, roll this thing out, and they had some other things to do first. They've got to do it. And I think they've got to have a flagship car, and okay. It's got to be the best.
All right, so Cadillac sales through July were down 2% overall.
Correct.
Okay, so I got to thinking about this big car that car guys always love to say that companies really, really, really need.
You're going to quote S-Class.
Well, no. No, wait. We'll get to S-Class. Okay, Lexus LS 460. For the first, through July, they sold 4,524 units, down 22.2%. Audi A8L S8, they sold 3,137 units, down 11.7%. BMW 7 Series, they sold 5,255 units. Now, 7 months, this is
right.
Cumulative sales, and yeah. They were down 11.3%.
Right.
Now, S-Class, they sold 13,151 units, up 93.7%.
It's a brand new car.
It's a brand new car.
If you had quoted sales a year ago, they would have been in the toilet.
Well, okay, but a year ago, I mean, they were selling infinitesimal. Right. But what I thought was interesting is CLA, the cheapo Mercedes, which they didn't have last year. So this is remember the what was it? Super Bowl ads brought it out of the box. So yeah. that was in what
February? Early February.
Super Bowl, right? So
February 6th.
So this is still counting first 7 months. They sold 12,954, which is a difference of merely 197 units.
does a luxury brand need a big car? Or is it just a way to lose sales or not have sales or to lose money?
Well, you know, when you get in the luxury end, now status and prestige really counts for something. And if you want to make your brand have great residual values, make it aspirational, you got to do things that may not pencil from a bottom-line standpoint in the short term. This is definitely a long-term play.
Look, if you're going to roll out an El Mirage, or however they pronounce it, I'm interested. I mean, I think, you know, with Cadillac's been great the last, you know, two and a half, three years in terms of the designs that have come out. And my dad's a Ford retiree, and I always try and buy, you know, Ford products. And I have a hard time looking that way now because, you know, I'll be 45 in October, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm at that point now where I can really start thinking about these cars. But, you know, the news this week not only was about the big car, was, you know, they were talking about putting this A3 CLA fighter out as well. They were looking to, you know,
right,
sort of top and bottom of the market there. And, you know, if you can get me into this A3 fighter so that I have something to look up to, you know, in maybe 10 or, you know, 10 years or so, you know, I mean, it seems to make a lot of sense to me, even if you're taking a loss on it for a while there.
Hey, we've got a question regarding Cadillac. RTK42C says, what do you make of the rumor that Cadillac could shift operations from Detroit to Manhattan? While at Infiniti, Johan got Infiniti to sponsor Red Bull F1. Do you think he'll push Cadillac to go F1, perhaps return to the LMP class at Le Mans, or do something entirely else? Now, I haven't heard any rumors of moving Cadillac to Manhattan.
So how did it work out for Lincoln when they moved to California?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that
they're back here.
Yeah, that was...
That's how well it worked out.
Yeah, PAG, remember that they were going to have all of the collection of the brands there. And
he moved Infiniti out of Japan to Singapore. And I don't know how that's going.
Globally, it might be doing well, but domestically, eh.
Right.
But does anybody really care where the president's office is?
No.
Okay, and by and large, the president's on an airplane all the time. I mean, these guys are traveling constantly. I mean, you look at their schedules; it's like they're insane. Why do they want this job? It's not a good thing. But okay, so Cadillac in F1 doesn't make sense.
No, not going to happen.
Right, Le Mans, yes.
Le Mans could be right.
Right,
there's a little bit of a history there. Mm-hmm. But look, Johan's got huge issues to address right now. Motor racing's got to be about the last thing he wants to be thinking of now, especially a Le Mans program, which is going to be horrifically expensive, hundreds of millions of dollars, if you're going to do it right and go for the overall win.
So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the LTS, the big one, comes out at the end of 2015. What does this do to Lincoln? Because Lincoln doesn't have their big one.
Oh, they're working on it.
Well, of course they're working on it. Everybody's working on it.
Yeah.
That's going to be the last series of stories that Matthew McConaughey is going to tell us about in these two ads. Yeah, he started starting in the little MKC, and he's going to work his way up to, you know.
Well, look, you know, Ford didn't develop a brand new rear drive Mustang platform just to do the Mustang. They are going to spin other models.
Oh, but come on, it's not big enough. I mean, we're talking some land barge here. We're not talking
about...
Well,
that's easy. You just get some angle iron, cut the car in half. I know how to do that.
That's the trick. Yeah, that'll do it.
I don't know. You know, Field seems pretty serious about, you know, rescuing Lincoln. I mean, he said he wasn't going to make any changes, and 2 weeks after, less than 2 weeks after he took charge, he's like, okay, you know, let's have the marketing guy only do marketing. So Farley's out, and we're gonna bring somebody and put him in place in Lincoln to really, you know, really make it a brand and really supervise it and grow it. And
the guy who's an expert in Asia, where they're gonna actually make all their hay.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, to me, I mean, there, you know, at least early on, there seems to be a commitment on his part to.
Well, you know, as I talked about before, how the Detroit 3 are sliding down the list when you measure it by revenue or profit. That's why Lincoln has got to get turned around. You know, take Audi out of Volkswagen's profits, man, and they plummet. So that's what, and you know, look at, here's BMW, number one in being able to spend on R&D as a percentage revenue. That's why Ford desperately needs to get Lincoln back on its feet. That's the same reason with Cadillac and General Motors. You do it right, man, you can make a lot of money off those brands. Mm-hmm. But it's a long-term play. It's not going to happen by 2020. Maybe Cadillac will get there by 2030. Maybe Lincoln will get there by 2040. I'm serious. That's going to be a long term.
We're going to still be driving cars in 2030, 2040? Well, we're not going to be driving cars, but I mean...
We'll be riding them.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be autonomous cars. Come on.
That's right.
But speaking of Mark Fields, do you think he's sleeping very well at night now that the Escape has had its 11th recall?
That can't be good.
I mean...
That's not good at all.
You know, and he's sitting there thinking, oh, gee, I've got that Mustang coming, and...
They've got a lot of launches this year, huge, massive launches. You're right, and... Look, the Escape's one of the best-selling vehicles that they have. 11 recalls. That hurts.
Mm-hmm. And they're mainly EcoBoost engine problems. And so, what are they hanging the hat of the F-150? I mean, if we take the aluminum and put that over on the side, it's the EcoBoost that they're going to be putting in there. It's got to be, he can't be sleeping well.
That's, because if the EcoBoost... gets a bad name, boy, yow.
Mm-hmm. It'll go south in a hurry.
They need art in their dealerships.
That's right.
You're going to need a whole
army of them.
Yeah, I was just saying. Yeah. Right. It'd be like iRobot.
For the attack.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so I've prepared questions for you guys for our own little rapid-fire segment here, and I'm wondering, do you guys have questions? Oh, you do?
Look at that.
All right, look at that. Okay, so since I brought it up, I'm going to go first. And remember, there's no thinking. You just got to give an answer. And I'll start it with Gary, but Mike, you can chime in too. The question goes like this. Sergio wants to sell 400,000 Alfa Romeos worldwide. In North America, he wants to sell 150,000 Alfas by 2018. And he just put Reid Biglin in charge of doing that for North America. The question is... can Alfa hit that kind of sales target?
Wasn't it 75?
Well, I've seen two numbers.
So let's just say, for the sake of argument, we'll give him a break and say it's
75,000. Okay,
Reid Biglin, for those who don't know, is the guy who was running Ram, okay?
Well, he had been.
Right, but I mean, and now, okay, so he's right. Been at Ram, now he's going to be moved over, he has been moved to Alfa.
He's got like four jobs. He's running Chrysler of Canada, he's running sales operations for the United States, he's on the board of directors of Chrysler, he's on some technical committee or something or other at Fiat, so yeah, now he's got to run Alfa Romeo in the North American market. Can he hit 75,000 sales by 2018?
I think he sleeps less well than Mark Fields.
I don't think he sleeps at all.
Okay, next.
Will National Electric Vehicle Sweden be able to bring Saab back from the dead? And if it does, will anybody really care about another Swedish car brand owned by the Chinese?
Hell no, it's never going to happen.
Mike?
I'm with John on this one. I just don't see how that works.
Okay, Mike, your turn.
Today, an hourly worker at Ford filed suit with the NLRB, claiming that he's unhappy that Ford and the UAW keeps taking full dues out of his check. You know, the vast majority of their hourly workers are here in Michigan. When they get to 2015, does this impact the UAW membership drive money-wise? Are we going to see an exodus of people?
So opting out, right to work state.
So they could say, you know what, I don't want to pay any more amount. Like, you know, for example, teachers, you know, they had 1,500 of their 110,000 opt out.
Yeah, it's not going to happen with the UAW.
I don't think so either.
And because everybody needs to remember that, I want to say the UAW is already in six right to work states, represents plants in six right to work plants. Practically nobody has dropped out of the union. Practically nobody. Mm-hmm. And because it's rapid fire, I won't dive into more stuff about this one question because I think there's a lot more going on there. But anyway, my turn. Honda attacked its competitors this week for selling vehicles to fleets, for using incentives to sell cars, and for offering long-term loans to consumers. My question is this why Honda's market share has fallen for 2 years in a row?
Because they're attacking their competitors?
No, because their competitors are doing these other things.
Well, according to Honda, excluding full-size pickups, the Accord, Civic, and CR-V continue to hold three of the top five spots in retail sales, first, third, and fourth. First half of 2014, I think Honda's in great shape, and I don't know why they're making any noise at all about things like that.
Yeah. I sort of wonder what all the fuss is about. It's, you know, like I said, you've got three of the top four. Somebody come upset that they didn't... it's like getting a 9 on an APGAR test when your baby's born. Why didn't they get a 10? You know, it's please, you know. You okay. Need to be the top three. All right, well.
Gary.
All right, what's going to have a bigger impact on the recovering European auto segment? The potential of the ban of Western imported cars into Russia or something going pear-shaped in the Iraqi oil fields due to ISIS?
And what will
have a bigger negative effect?
Bigger negative effect.
Putin or ISIS?
Good question. I'll say Putin.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Putin. We don't sell anything over in the Midwest, so. I mean, Middle East, excuse me.
And it looks like there's plenty of oil going around anyway for the time being.
Yeah, I should say we haven't seen gas prices change appreciably in the last, you know, 6 weeks, really. I mean.
Your turn, Mike.
All right, I'm gonna be the wet blanket. Is the Dream Cruise getting too commercial? And if it's not, when will we know if it is?
No, I don't think it's too commercial. Not for what I saw of it.
I think it's got to be commercial if it's going to survive.
I just want them to do something about the traffic.
Well, fewer cars.
Yeah. Okay, my turn. If autonomous cars eliminate most accidents in the future, is this going to cripple the automotive insurance business?
Cripple's too strong a word. Yes, it's going to have a big, big, big effect on them, and they'll have to figure out something else to do to get money from us.
Yeah, you're going to sort of wonder, how much is an auto policy going to cost after a while? What are we going to see rates go up to? Because they've got to make up that cost somehow. Maybe homeowners insurance is going to go up tremendously as well.
Gary, you got another?
Yeah. All right, so Pebble Beach this last weekend, right? So McLaren introduced the track-oriented P1 GTR, okay? Now, there's no price on that, but the non-track-oriented P1 costs $1.5 million. They built 375 of them, and they sold all of them out. Are they crazy or crazy like a fox?
Crazy like a fox.
Ditto.
Mike, you got another?
You chopped all mine up.
Okay, I've got one more here myself. China is considering adopting the California Air Resources Board's regulations. My question is China going to show any improvement in pollution in its cities by 2030?
Are they going to move all the people out with cars? Every time they implement some sort of regulation, it seems to have such a negligible effect. I think, you know,
if they go with CARB's policies, yes, there'll be a change. People will actually be able to breathe without respirators.
You got another one, Gary?
No.
Okay, good. So, it's an interesting show. I mean, I liked having art in the studio.
Yeah, we had robots in the studio. We had real people in the studio.
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff.
Clones in the studio.
So, Mike Strong, thanks for stopping by. Well,
thanks for inviting me out. It was great. I enjoyed it.
Well, good. Gary, good seeing you again after a couple of week hiatus.
Right,
here.
And I won't see you next week, but I'll be here next week.
Yeah.
And you won't. And. Yeah. We're going to have an interesting show with Larry Nitz from General Motors. He's going to talk about electrified vehicles and things like that. And so I'm sorry you won't be here.
Yeah, no, I'll be traveling. So anyway, want to thank you guys and want to thank everybody else who tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Hyundai. See what makes Elantra so nice. Check out its style, interior space, fuel economy, and popular features now.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.